Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's high noon on a Saturday. That means 2 hours of Oiler talk, past, present, and future. This is Nation Radio, obviously brought to you by Edmonton Motors, and we're thrilled to have you here today. Lots to talk about today. Very interesting show. We'll have Terry Jones, Hall of Fame writer from the Edmonton Sun, following the Oklahoma City Barons, with the Oilers having a little off time with the All-Star break. He's down in Oklahoma City on Route 66, and we talked to him, and we'll pass that along in just a few minutes. Talk about the suspects, the prospects, and the facts about this Oklahoma City team and how well they're doing historically in the win-loss department. Jason Greger, host of the Jason Greger Show right here on Team 1260, will join us as well. We'll talk trade deadline, some of the prospects that have progressed either at the NHL or AHL level or not progressed, and what we could expect from the Oilers in the last 30 games. I think there's a chance here that the Oilers have to make a decision. That's, do we want to draft second or third overall, or is it more important to win some games here between the end of the, now and the end of the year, and certainly that would impact Tom Rennie and his future, or could anyway. Dennis King of Dennis King Scoring Chances and MC79 Hockey. I did talk to Dennis a little bit earlier today, just a few minutes ago, as a matter of fact. A very interesting interview. Stay tuned for that. That'll be in hour number two. Lots to talk about there, and we'll look forward to passing that along to you. Jim Byers from the Oklahoma City Barons. He's the play-by-play guy. We've had him on for, we're coming up on the one-year anniversary of this show. Jim's probably been a guest five or six times and gives some great insight into the players that Coach Nelson is using heavily and in what situations, and we'll definitely want to know what's going on there with this winning streak, and they're playing very well in Oklahoma City. We'll tell you more about that. And Dennis Murphy, co-founder of the World Hockey Association, and probably, nothing, you had to be there, but there was no chance the NHL was ever coming to Edmonton. I mean, Vancouver barely got a team in 1970. When the WHA came to Edmonton as the Alberta Oilers in 1972, I mean, it was the big leagues, the major league, and most of us, most of the guys my age and maybe a little younger, that was our first big league game. I remember it very well, Norm Ullman, and anybody in their 50s or maybe 40s can remember the WHA very well, and it was such a great, great time. And we'll talk to Dennis Murphy, one of the founders of that great league, about, looking back, it's coming up on, well, it's a lot of years ago, 40 or more, and we'll have that for you as well sometime before 2 o'clock today. Now, Terry Jones broke the news about a week ago. It still has Oilers Nation abuzz. Steve Tamalini will sign an extension, but not so fast for Tom Rennie. And direct quotes here from the article from Jones. He says, and I quote, "Tamalini will be given the opportunity with a contract extension to carry on through additional years of the massive rebuild." And later on in the article, he says, "The only possible disconnect, or the only thing to iron out, is how long the deal is. My suspicion is it's like maybe a 2 or 3 year deal, something along those lines, but that's me editorializing." Also in the article, again quoting Terry Jones, "Ideally, I believe the Oilers will want to wait the entire season, judge the job Rennie has done in its entirety, and make a decision if he's the right guy to go forward." So putting all that together, my feeling is, and you can agree or disagree, and you can always email us as well at nationradio at theteam1260.com, or drop off your questions and comments at either Oilers Nation or Low Tide or on Twitter. But my feeling is that makes the last 30-some games very important to win, and something the Oilers haven't had in the last little while, because they're at a point now where they could actually, end up, if they got lucky, maybe getting the first overall pick again. It's my sense that the organization is heading the other way, which means wins are going to be important. And with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Tom Gilbert coming back, there will be that opportunity at some point in time to start winning hockey games, hopefully when they get back against Colorado next week. So also today, we'll talk about the trade deadline coming. We're getting all kinds of names being thrown around. Hemsky, Gagné, Haviboulin, Sutton, Peckham was even mentioned this week. I can't remember. Was it Bruce Garriott? Can't recall. Anyway, what does it all mean? Well, we'll attempt to answer that and find out if there's anything really to that in the next 2 hours. Jordan Eberle at the All-Star game, he deserves the honor. I have to say that it stuck in my craw a little when the NHL informed the Oilers that they would have chosen Eberle, but he was hurt. Honestly, the entire group that they chose the first time around was basically injured, and all they've been doing is replacing players since. So I'm glad it all, got settled. But if it hadn't gotten settled with Eberle at the All-Star game, I would have gone on the internet and voiced my displeasure. Let me tell you, because it just seemed to me to be a ridiculous outcome. Anyway, one of the big stories for the Oilers, and maybe the reason or one of the reasons for Steve Tambellini's extension, is the performance of the Barons in Oklahoma City. And we're going to talk to Terry Jones and Jim Byers about that today, and Dennis King will chime in as well. You know, and the final thing we have today is, it's kind of close to my heart, because it's my belief that the NHL doesn't come to Edmonton in 1979, that Gretzky to Curry happened somewhere else or not at all. And really, the World Hockey Association is massive for this part of the world, because, you know, for me, the first time I ever saw anything about hockey on the prairies and in Western Canada was as a kid in Maidstone, Saskatchewan, delivering the Saskatoon Star Phoenix, and I saw a picture above the fold of Bill Hunter in front of a big white billboard. I think it was on the Yellowhead, and he'd held a press conference and said, the WHA is coming, get your tickets right now. And the World Hockey Association brought us a lot of things between 72 and 79, but the legacy of that league is obviously the Edmonton Oilers, and the fact that the National Hockey League exists in what would have been definitely in the 1970s non-traditional markets. So with that, we're going to get underway with the show. Very, very busy one. We actually had two interviews we did before the show began. The first one, Terry Jones is in Oklahoma City. He's been writing a few reports in the last few days from Oklahoma City about the Barons, about the organization, about the building, about Coach Nelson. And so we had an opportunity to talk as he was cruising down Route 66 earlier today to Terry Jones about everything he's been covering in the Edmonton Sun the last few days. How's your route down Route 66 going today?
It's going terrific. A couple of minutes ago, I sent out a tweet with a picture of a 66-foot-high stylized pop bottle, which is at a place called Pops, where I had a couple of old-fashioned hamburgers and listened to some of my 50s and 60s music. And it's ready to go and head down. I think I'm going to go north here, all the way up through Tulsa. Believe it or not, it's right here in Oklahoma that has the most miles of preserved stretches of what they call America's Highway or the Mother Road. And you know my background. I'm an old 50s, 60s guy, a trip back in time up Route 66 is right up my alley.
I think the lyric goes something like from Chicago all the way to Los Angeles or something, right? It was a long, long highway.
And you get your kicks on Route 66.
All right, we're going to start singing here, so let's move along. I've been following you on Twitter, and you've been writing some great articles about the Oklahoma City Barons. What was your impression of the game last night? A big win for the Barons. How did you feel about the team?
Well, it was kind of two games, because the first two periods they played great, and then it ended up as a 5-2 game. They kind of let it get away from themselves and had a parade to the penalty box in the third period. But you can see why this team is leading the American Hockey League, 30 teams, and they're in first overall. They got a lot of things going for them here, and there's a whole bunch of other prospects that are going to be headed here next year. So it's going to be really interesting to watch it unfold. But 5-2 win over Houston. The Houston Aeros are second in their division, and they've won all six games against them, 6-0 against this club.
Of the group that we know as Oiler observers and fans, who impressed you most from the prospects that we may eventually see here one day?
Pretty much the people I expected. Philippe Cornet, who is a 21-year-old kid that just started last year, you know, with minimal ice time and lots of time in the press box, and didn't really get much out of the season until about March. But had a, you know, really went to work in the off season and has been, you know, the story of the year. He's headed to the American League All-Star game on Monday on the boardwalk in Atlantic City, and he looked pretty good considering how you know, he hasn't really played that well, or at least had produced that well to this point. Got a chance to watch Pitlick last night. He was the first pick in the second round behind Taylor Hall, and he didn't look too bad. I'll tell you what, the kid can fly, and he picked up a point, and maybe it's starting to come for him.
Todd, Coach Nelson has told us that Pitlick is a physical player, has good speed, and he's improving away from the puck. And when he does get the puck, some good things happen, but it's a process. Do you see him, obviously the first time you've seen him in Oklahoma City, but is he a guy who makes his presence felt out there every game?
No, I don't think that's the case yet, but he's growing into it. And as you know, if you've done your homework on this, and I know you do it, and talk to Todd fairly often, they're making the kids earn every minute of ice time here, and him and Hamilton in particular, both second round draft choices from that year, have struggled in the first half, and we're getting 8 and 10 minutes of ice time now. They're up to 10 to 12. Well, they don't give you a stat sheet in the American League telling you how much ice time.
Right,
it's a pain in the butt. But
it is a pain. I agree with you. Yeah,
you can tell, and I know the coaching staff thinks this kid is going to be a force. They're turning them pro. Let's face it, it's a big jump from junior hockey to here, especially when you're used to getting a lot of ice time and a lot of points, and maybe not having to have that pro discipline that you have to develop.
In looking at the way that the team is being handled this year, and you mentioned it about the kids having to earn every minute of ice time, it looks to me as though the Oilers are kind of creating something similar to the Detroit model, where if a kid turns pro out of junior, as you say, he might spend his entire entry-level contract all 3 years in the American League with a cup of coffee in the NHL every once in a while. Is that what you see the Oilers doing as well?
Unless you're the number one pick in the draft, absolutely. And it's kind of a rebound effect here. Magnus Pjärvi played his first game of his second stint down here. And I think they're more committed to doing that than they were when they started this process. I think at the start of this season, the intention was to play Anton Lander down here for a significant amount of time. But the injury situation left him in the lineup upstairs, and he's been there all year, and I suspect he'll stay there all year. But as you go down the roster, it's going to work that way. And their idea is to get and you mentioned the Detroit model. It certainly worked. Is to get the kids so pro ready that when they do, other than your cups of coffee, as you say, that when they do get brought up to the big team, they'll be ready to stay with the big team.
It's great for the organization, but I'm wondering how some of these players feel. Have you had an opportunity to talk to Pitlick or Hamilton or Hartikainen about how they feel about the situation in regard to playing time?
I believe it's in yesterday's paper. I did a lot with Pitlick and Hamilton on that subject. They don't have any complaints at all. As a matter of fact, I have never seen a minor league club that, and admittedly, I'm doing a quick hit here and scraping the surface to some extent, but the amount of stuff they volunteer about how happy they are with the, particularly the coaching staff here, the environment here, the way they interact with each other here, the atmosphere. Obviously, when you're winning, it's fun. What a contrast to up and down from Edmonton to here. But I think there's a belief, and this certainly hasn't existed over the course of Oiler history, that they're doing the right things with the people and I don't see anybody other than Linus Omark, his first time here that came down with the pout on.
You mentioned about that article, and I did read it. And another item that we'll get back to Oklahoma City in a second, but I thought your item on Marinson was interesting, in that the Oilers are really getting involved, even off ice, to make sure that these kids develop properly.
Yeah, in his case, it seems so simple, but I think it was Frank Musil, done scouting in Europe for them, that convinced him that, you know, if you're picking a player from over there and he doesn't speak English, you're doing a disservice to this kid if you don't, get him in an immersion program, to learn the language, because that's holding them back more often than the actual hockey itself. And they did that with him up in Prince George, with a couple of ladies up there that they found that could speak Slovakian. And now they got a kid who can converse in English and a bit, and growing. And they figure that's worth like a year of development time just in finding a comfort level. I mean, these kids are having to adjust to moving from Europe to North America. You know, they're teenagers. You can get homesick pretty easily. And being in an environment, the hockey environment where you're in the smaller rinks and riding the buses and the really grueling schedules that they have in the Western Hockey League. And, there's a lot of intelligent things that are going on here. Really, there are. And like I said, the Oilers have a horrid history in developing players until now.
You know, it's funny because I got a teenager at home, and I'd put him back a year if I moved the fridge, so I can understand the... I can understand how important that development is. Now, you mentioned it a minute ago, and I had a brief look, and I couldn't find a period in Oiler history. I mean, they developed some good players on the old Houston Apollos. Charlie Huddy came up through there. But I don't recall a time, Terry, where the Oilers had, last season was successful. This season looks even better for the Barons. Not necessarily in terms of development of individual players, but just the idea of winning hockey games. Do you recall this organization ever being this strong?
No. As a matter of fact, I did a bunch of research on it before I came down here. And one of the stats that I came up with that just floored me was these guys won their, I think it was 29th hockey game of the season here last night to move up to 61 points. They are quite easily going to reach a second straight 40-win season. Matter of fact, I think they got a heck of a shot at a 50-win season here. But never in the history of Oilers and franchises in the American Hockey League have they ever had back-to-back 40-win seasons in an 80-game schedule until now. Only three times in their previous history have they had 40-win seasons, and one was in Hamilton when they split the team with the Montreal Canadiens.
It's been crazy. In conversation with Terry Jones from the Edmonton Sun, I want to switch gears, Terry. You wrote an article, I guess, almost a week ago now, in regard to the Edmonton Oilers and the management and what was going to happen, and the fact that Tom Rennie is working on an extension, the only possible disconnect is term, and that Tom Rennie is, there's still a kind of a wait-and-see attitude. Have you been surprised by the reaction of the fan base on that story?
Yes and no. I've been surprised by the... First of all, you have to define the fan base, because with today's internet and social media and all that stuff, you get a very vocal audience that hasn't really existed in that volume and in the past. That you never heard that much from. I suspect most of them don't go to the rink very often.
Right.
But that's your fire the coach crowd, and the no patience group. And I expected that, but not in the volume, both in numbers and in actual volume that I saw from that. The number of hits on the Edmonton Sun website, came close to, I think, some sort of record on the response of readership. I'm not sure that the same kind of reaction is necessarily true with the season ticket holding base. I think that group has bought into the rebuilder, whatever you want to call it. With a lot more patience, it's quite clear that the frustration level that we didn't really see last year, which is remarkable in a Canadian city. Come on,
yeah, it is.
I thought the patience level throughout last year and the year before was different, because that was A lot of people get the idea that the Oilers intentionally blew this up, that blew itself up, and then they kind of designed around it. But the last year, it was an intentional rebuild with what I'm starting to see here is a really, really intelligent model, and I have more faith with where they're going here from this visit than I perhaps did before I took it. But with Steve Tambellini, I think a lot of people, are unhappy with, particularly as I am, with his pro scouting and the players that he's brought in so far to kind of build that bridge to the future. I think that's fair. I don't think he's been given near enough credit for development with the what they're doing down here on the farm and with acquiring bullets for Stu McGregor to do his job I still think that's a priority heading to the trade deadline. Although a lot of people are getting impatient and wanting some help on the defense right now type of help that. May not turn out any better than some of the right now help they've got to this point.
In your opinion, Terry, is it more important for Coach Rennie to win hockey games? And I know that's always important, but is it more important for the organization to win hockey games between now and the end of the year? Or do you think with them being where they are that, finishing maybe with the third overall pick isn't such a bad plan?
Well, I think you want to be as successful as you can be with this group right now because, you're not, and it's what they're doing down here on the farm as well. I mean, you want to develop as much as you can in terms of a winning culture. You've got your two first overall picks out of this deal so far. To be honest with you, the first two picks this year are a couple of Russian guys. I'm not sure how comfortable the Oilers would be picking another forward and another, particularly a Russian forward with the situation with the KHL, and although Neil Yakupov is playing in Sarnia, which is a pretty good indication he's going to be over here. But from there down, every indication I've gotten, I keep talking to scouts about it, is just loaded with defensemen, and I think they need another draft pick mid range in the first round to get another shot at one of those. And I think you said third overall. I think that'd be terrific, but Tom Rennie needs to win. If he needs to have the team playing like they did in those last two games
before the break,
more consistently, more often. I had no problem with Tom Rennie's coaching all the way until that last five games, including that Calgary game, when the try and the work and all of that was missing in three of those five games. Certainly the team, and it might have had a lot to do with our coverage, to be honest with you. I mean, the suggestion that was put out there that he might be coaching from the edge of a cliff if this continues. Mm-hmm. I thought the team answered and made a statement about that in those last two games.
I agree. That's a great point you make. Two quick things, and then we're going to let you get back to Route 66 here. I'm interviewing Dennis Murphy, one of the WHA founders, later on in the show. And I know that you've covered the NHL from 79 on and done it splendidly. Do you have any real strong memories of the WHA that you want to share? Anything that really, aside from the red pucks and all of that, that your recollection of the WHA that stands out?
Oh, absolutely. I broke in with as a pro hockey beat writer and columnist with the WHA, and I can quite frankly tell you it's my favorite league I've ever covered in my entire sports writing history. We had more fun covering that league. It was like everybody's in this together, the sports writers, the players, the referees, the coaches. A lot of crazy things happened. I remember I was flying to Houston to team back in my journal days when Jim Matheson was the beat writer and I was the columnist, and he was headed to Hartford for the All-Star game, and I was going to pick up the team for the second half of this long road trip to like 11 games or something like that. And I transferred through many, and I had about 4 hours between my connections. So I phoned Charlie Holman, a sports writer friend of mine, in St. Paul and said, "Hey, what's up, Charlie? Sitting at the airport." He said, "Get your butt over to the stage door bar in St. Paul because the Minnesota Folding Saints have folded again and they're having a match in there." So I booked out the next day and spent well into the night with the Minnesota Folding Saints that night. They hadn't had paychecks for a while, and there's just 100 stories, or 100,000 stories like that.
Oh, man.
And the travel was just insane, and you had to be young to cover that league, I'll tell you. But it was a blast, and just the anecdotes that I have from that league are just fantastic.
Quick one before we let you go. I know you're covering tonight's game, and I guess they're giving away free livestock at the game, or at least this afternoon. What can we look forward to from you in the sun in the next few days?
Well, we're going to be in Sunday sun. We'll take a long, hard look at the operation here, which, you know, I haven't... I haven't seen the cattle giveaway thing here tonight. It's a promotion with the Farm and Ranch Association that brings a lot of 4-H kids into the building, and Boy Scouts, the minor hockey program. It's a big promotional night here that way. They're giving away cowboy hats to the first, I can't remember how many kids that enter the building, a few hundred for sure. And I'm looking forward to experiencing that environment and writing about it, and the entire idea of the Oilers own this franchise, but they've got a working agreement with the people that used to own the AAA baseball team here, and previously the Central League Blazers team. Okay. To some extent, so it's an interesting partnership, and just bringing pro hockey back to Oklahoma City, where they had 5 Hall of Famers, believe it or not, played in the old days of the Central Hockey League. Harry Sinden coached here, Jerry Cheevers and Bernie Perrant and Dino Cicerelli, missing somebody, and some kid in the Boston Bruin organization by the name of Glenn Sather.
It was pretty good, too.
He was here.
Yeah. Terry, thanks so much. We'll look forward to it, and have a safe trip.
All right, thanks, guys.
That's Terry Jones from the Edmonton Sun, and talking a little bit about the Oklahoma City Barons and the team that they have down there, many of whom are on their way to the National Hockey League, or hopefully to the National Hockey League over the next few years. Got a few items here to pass along. We have Jason Greger coming up here in two shakes, but a few comments either via Twitter or on Oilers Nation blog. This is from Greg Z. He says, "All the talk that floods the internet about the job status of Tambellini and or Rennie misses the point. Whether or not the mainstream media or the blogosphere, man, I got to be able to say that better, are correct in their respective takes on the team also misses the point. It doesn't matter what you or I or anybody else thinks about what the year the rebuild began for this team and even how it's currently performing. The person who actually decides all of this stuff is Daryl Cates, full stop, and the failure of the organization to effectively communicate with the fan base is an enormous problem." That's from Greg Z. We also have this from Ryan Blackmore saying, "Ashamed to lose the only positive of this horrible season by finishing outside the lottery. Grigorenko would let us move number 89 for a defenseman." I think that's the issue we're going to discuss today, whether or not the Edmonton Oilers, who are really right now, I mean, they could, you know, lose every game and have a chance at the number one overall pick, or at the worst number two or three, or is it important for Tom Rennie to win some games, as Terry had suggested, win enough so that you're maybe drafting fifth or sixth, and you've salvaged a little bit from this season, especially with these young guys like Taylor Hall in year two and wanting to see and show some progress. So we'll talk about that with our other guests today. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 1234. We are around until 2 o'clock today, Jim Byers, play-by-play guy for the Oklahoma City Barons in hour number two, and Dennis Murphy, one of the founders of the World Hockey Association as well. We have Dennis King on the way as well from MC79 Hockey, talking about the Oilers and the Barons and much more. A few items via email here. This is from Dwayne. He said, I for one hope that neither Hemsky nor Gagne are moved, and certainly not for just draft picks or prospects that will project to be bottom six forwards or bottom pairing defensemen like Tubert. It's not like we have players pushing to be in the top six, so we would be putting bottom six players into a top six role or worse, recalling players not ready yet to be in the NHL. That's why I wonder if there would be any idea that the Oilers would trade both Hemsky and Gagne. We'll ask Jason in a minute, but I can't see that. Gagne, to me, would be a likely replacement on right wing should Hemsky be moved along at the deadline, which more and more seems likely. So we'll get some input there and find out exactly what's going on in Two Shakes here with Jason. This is from Ron. He says, I grew up watching the Eastern Alberta Hockey League for a few years. The Maidstone Jets were part of the league. Great hockey. Actually, I used to go to see the Jets all the time when I was a kid. My grandpa helped build the arena in Maidstone. So I mean, you talk about your useless trivia. You cannot get more useless than that, but there you go. This is Nation Radio. We're all about the Edmonton Oilers past, present, and future each week, and we invite you to you know, give us your opinion. That's what we really are about here, because the discussion today is a lot about the minor league team and what's coming up and how many wins they have, but it's also about this situation the Oilers are in right now, where there's an opportunity to kind of get into the lottery again just by losing hockey games, and that's pretty easy to do. And with the injuries that they've had, they certainly proved that in January. But with Tom Gilbert coming back and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins coming back, there's a combination of things that are happening. Number one, you've got a situation where the Oilers can be healthy and probably win some games over the next little while and get out of the lottery situation, or do you kind of, you know, pull it back again? The problem, of course, is that Tom Rennie's job, apparently, according to Terry Jones' article, is hanging in the balance. So there's lots going on as far as the Edmonton Oilers are concerned and the Oklahoma City Barons as well. I'm just going to check here with Connor and see what's shaking. We're either going to go to Dennis King and talk to him from a pre-recorded interview, or we're going to get Jason Greger here in Two Shakes. So let's just touch base and see where we're at. Going to go to Dennis? Okay. This is a pre-recording of a conversation I had with Dennis King from MC79 Hockey earlier in the day, and we talked about a wide range of things, so let's get rolling. Dennis, let's start about with Magnus Pajärvi, a good place to start today. You were the first person I ever heard or read talking about concern over his offense and how much he was going to bring. What did you see in his game early on that is obviously manifesting itself now?
Well, Lane, that's because I'm a trendsetter.
Ah, that's it.
No, you know, everything, the more you watch sports, and I mean, God knows I've watched a lot of sports and wasted a lot of time, everything, you're always looking for something that's repeatable in terms of, I mean, you and I are baseball guys, first and foremost. I mean, a swing, you're looking for a swing that's repeatable, an approach that's repeatable. When I watch basketball all the time, I always look at, well, how long does it take, like how many seconds did it take on the shot clock for a team to score? Sometimes you'll watch a team, they'll go down and they'll have a basket in like 10 seconds. If you see the other team go down and it takes them 20 to get that bucket, you're thinking, well, it takes them that long to figure out the defense and it's that much harder for them to score. And with hockey, I'm looking for people who always go to the same areas and get their scoring chance from the same areas. One of the things that I liked about Eberle, for example, he'll suck the puck to the middle and change the angle. Like when he was a kid starting out, I'd see him do that, and I was like, well, geez, like here's a guy with a clue right out of the box. And, I mean, I watch Pajärvi, you know, I love the toolbox and stuff. I love all this, you know, I love the skill set that he seems to have. But he would just go to the outside. I mean, he would be content to the outside. He wouldn't hang around the crease to bang in rebounds. So he had a really good stretch to finish last year. And he had a lot of ice time because, I mean, we had so many injuries. You know, it's the Oilers, so that's a given. But, you know, then that pumped his numbers. But before that, I mean, he struggled really for the first 45 or 50 games. And that was really when I started to worry about him and, you know, muse about it, because I'm not a guy who watches a lot of junior hockey or even a lot of AHL hockey. But once I started watching the guy at the pro level, I think I got a pretty good idea at just being able to pick out the foibles and pick out the strengths. And as soon as I watched him play, I was like, well, I really don't see him going to the areas where he scores goals, so I'm not really sure where the offense is going to come from.
He also seems to be a little shy, and by that I mean in the first game this year against Pittsburgh, maybe 15 minutes gone in the first period, he comes down the left side, and it was, I think, Lovejoy who hit him, knocked him down, no reaction from Pajarvi, the play goes on. 3 minutes later, Hall does the same thing. Lovejoy is strong on him. Hall turns around, he gives him a little cross check, a little push, they engage a little bit physically. What I'm concerned about with Pajarvi is, and I mean, I'm not one of those people who thinks that you know, Europeans are soft. The Sedins are as hard as anybody. I get that. My concern is that Pajarvi does seem a little bit to be a peripheral player and a little shy of physical contact.
Yeah, I'm like, just for a second, you know, if the Penguins, if Ben Lovejoy's nickname is not the Reverend, then I'll be really disappointed in the Penguins. And also on another tangent, if Yuri Talusi's nickname is not Dick, then I'll be really disappointed in Carolina too. But anyway, yeah, to get the priority, you know, I was watching the other night and I saw Taylor Hall get pushed around a little bit. You know what we forget is that these kids sometimes are not really all that strong. And if you're in the weight room and you're not pushing as much as, say, a guy who's 5 or 6 years older than you, and you're not a guy who is naturally strong, then you don't think that plays into your mind when you go into the corners. Like, you, maybe sometimes you don't push back because, honestly, you're not able to.
But then, and we're extrapolating here, but then why are the Oilers, over the last several years, trying to develop so many young players at the NHL level at the same time?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I just know, like, with Pajarvi, I think you get it, like, a great point. I mean, a guy like Eberle is one of those fellows who manages not to get hit.
Yeah.
Hall is a guy who is maybe not, like, I don't think he is. Like, I've seen him get pushed around a bit. Hall is not really that strong. But you know what? Like, he doesn't have any fear.
No.
I think Pajarvi could be a kid who's, like, knows he's not really all that strong, and when he goes into a battle, he knows that he's not really all that prepared. That makes him a little bit timid. And, you know, I guess this is probably the next thing you're going to ask me, but when I look at Pajarvi, I see, like, he tops out at Radek Dvorak, and I make that comparison just because, well, I mean, he's in, you know, the recent view as an Oiler, and also a guy who was, like, a really high draft pick with speed to burn.
Yeah.
But really, outside of the first couple of years, didn't really show a lot of hands. I remember he had like 16 goals and 51 points or something like 1 year with the Oilers, but, you know, never a consistent 25-goal scorer. But became a useful player because he could play in your top nine and he could match against the other team's real lines, and he was also a hell of a penalty killer.
If you had a vote, would you keep him down on the farm for the rest of this year?
Oh, yeah, no question. You know, maybe... maybe he comes back up after Hamsky gets dealt because for a while you would see on the blogs people would talk, well, you know, Pajarvi was primarily a right winger in Europe. And, you know, there's so many bad things to talk about the Oilers that one of the recent things that I don't think anybody has really pounced on is that he has been playing right wing the last few games.
Mm-hmm.
So I think once Hamsky is dealt, I mean, you could put him down now and keep him there. He'd get, what, I don't know, between 8 and 12 more games in the A. If you were ready to give him top six, you're ready to make him the second-line right winger behind Eberle after Hamsky is dealt, well, then I'd bring him back. But, I mean, just to get back to an earlier point, like, he really soared last year when he had great line mates and a lot of time. I mean, if you're going to play him between 10 and 12 minutes a night with Eric Blanje and Sam Gagne, absolutely I put him in OKC.
Yeah.
But, you know, that would make sense. And the fact that we can see Anton Lander learning on the job, he's as likely suited for OKC as Pajarvi is, yet there's no talk of him going there.
You know, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? And especially because they're developing two rookie centers at the same time again, Nugent Hopkins and Lander. But the Oilers are very high on Lander, whose offensive ability is I mean, it's at least somewhat in question, right?
Oh, yeah. No, well, yeah. I mean, he had a great shot on that on his first career goal, and he had, like, a sweet move on the second one in Columbus. And the other night, I know he had ripped a hard shot in a home game. But otherwise, like, have I seen him, like, shooting from, like, high-quality positions on the ice? Absolutely not. Like, he's a kid that I'm looking and I'm wondering, like, you know, where's the offense going to come from? All the same, I mean, I can remember Gorkov's first 47 or 48 games a bit similar. A better skater than Landner, but a little bit similar in terms of...
That's a good point.
I was looking at his numbers. Like, okay, well, he scored at Michigan State and he scored in Hamilton. But, like, you know, how is he going to do when he gets to the NHL? And then all of a sudden, well, we saw the way that he would develop as a good two-way 45, 50-point guy, and maybe that's Landner's future.
Yep. Let's change subject and talk about Alex Hemsky. I think most of us feel like he's going to be traded at the deadline. Do you agree with that? And then secondly, what do you think the Oilers reasonably can expect to get from Alex Hemsky at the deadline?
Yeah, I think he's going to be dealt. I mean, I said, like, I tweeted this and I said it around the blogs, like, as much as I dislike Kevin Lowe and think that everybody gives him a free ride, and I mean, the handling of sacred cows is always what has driven me mad anyway. But, I mean, I think that, you know, Lowe's presence is the only reason why Hemsky is still here. And to call upon an old prospect that we both like, Hugh Moore to me was Marc-Antoine Pouliot. And I think that he stayed around for a longer time than other GMs would have kept him just because Lowe picked him and he was his guy. And, I mean, I think Hemsky could have been dealt a long time ago, but I think that Lowe holds out a little bit of hope that they can sign him. What worries me is this stupid narrative that's picked up a lot of steam, where all of a sudden, despite stats to back up the contrary opinion, Alex Hemsky has been inconsistent. I mean, I don't know where this narrative is coming from. He's having a bad year this year, but if you look back beforehand, he's not in. He's a good player.
Yep.
He's played like hard minutes on abysmal teams. Not bad, abysmal teams. And all of a sudden, you get a guy like Ray Ferraro who does hits all over the country and maybe in the U.S. too. And Ray Ferraro, well, you know, Hemsky is inconsistent. No, he's not. Like, where does this narrative come from? Is this the prep work that these guys do when you go and talk to the executives from both teams and you get your talking points for tonight? This is what I'm really worried about. I mean, and which is the biggest sign to me that he's at the door.
The surprise for me is Kevin Lowe would have learned at least a little bit at the feet of Glenn Sather, who, and I'm not exaggerating this, Glenn Sather borderline worshipped skill. I mean, he'd do anything to get a skill guy. They brought in more guys who had failed other places but were skilled in Edmonton than anywhere. And to me, Hemsky is a guy you almost hold on to like grim death if you can sign him.
Yeah, you know, I had a busy week because I was helping Tim Thomas secure a cabin in Montana. And then afterwards, I'd like to announce now that I helm the new bid, the new mystery bid that Bevin is talking about for Phoenix.
Oh, good, good.
So there was a lot to do, but you brought up Sather, reminded me of something the other night, just watching the Rangers and reading a bit of Rangers coverage. I think that the Rangers could be the dark horse in the Hemsky thing. I mean, I think the Predators and the Kings are easy targets just because there's a history of dealing with them. I mean, we had the Grebyshov deal not too long ago, and of course, you know, all the deals with L.A. And obviously, you know, they can pluck defensemen off trees, and that's what we need. But the Rangers aren't getting anything from their bottom two lines. And I think that's the dark horse team to take Hemsky up.
Interesting. That's very interesting. Let's switch gears because I know your second favorite team is the Montreal Canadiens, and I can't even get through that without laughing. But for those of us like me who grew up like just hating the Habs because they always got the breaks, this year has been either a godsend or the most confusing thing we've ever seen. Explain what's going on in Montreal.
Well, if you look at the goal differential, which I always do, I mean, you look at the Wild were on a big tear early on, and everybody was like, well, they're going to regress to the mean. I mean, the injuries helped it, but still, like, you know, you can't win one-goal games consistently. It's like one-run victories in baseball, and I mean, you could see the studies about that. And the Canadians are what, -4 or -5? I mean, the Senators are a little bit worse than many points ahead. So, I mean, I'm not ready to say that the team on the ice is terrible. It's been hamstrung by a couple of bad contracts, and notably Gianta and Gomez. And there is, sadly, a parallel to be made with them and Edmonton in that free agents are loath to go to Montreal. Like, can you remember, they practically begged Brett Hall to come and he wouldn't go.
Yeah.
The year that Ryan Smith was up, they put on a big campaign and he wouldn't come. So you get a guy like Gianta, and then because you can't get a quality free agent, you got to sign for a guy like Gomez, who was inked to a pact at the time that turned heads. and now looks even worse. But, I mean, you got to pick him up to be your center because you can't draft and develop him, and you can't get a better center to come as a free agent. But still, you know, on the ice, like, I don't really think they're that bad. And, I mean, they're mediocre, but they're not terrible. But what makes that situation so toxic is the external pressure that it seems like they put on themselves. I mean, when, you know, and I'm, you know, getting back to the Expos again, because I tried to read two papers, you know, when the Expos were in existence, and there was a bit of politics at the time, but they didn't have the pride in the Expos that they do in the Canadiens. And as a guy who hates Montreal, who hates the team and hates the fans, I love how they hamstring themselves by saying, no, success on its own is not good enough. The success has to be authored by a person who speaks a certain language.
It does. It flies in the face of logic. It really does.
Yeah, it makes zero sense. It's like, no, it's not good enough that, you know, we could get an English person here to do well. Like, you know, we got to even sweeten the pot further by making sure it's somebody who can speak French. So you have all these external pressures. You have the president coming out and basically apologizing because they had Randy Cunningworth there as the coach. I mean, Cunningworth is a dead dog. You know, he's a dead man walking there trying to make the team run, all the while knowing that he's not going to be back in the next year. I mean, it's just problems beget problems in Montreal, and they make it so hard on themselves.
Let's change gears a little bit and talk about something that happened this week. Terry Jones wrote an article in the Edmonton Sun 5 or 6 days ago in which he revealed that Tom Rennie was negotiating an extension, and the only disconnect possible was the length of time he would be signed. A lot of reaction from fans has been surprising and shocking just because of the performance of the team at the NHL level. What's your reaction to that?
Well, you know, it's like, I'm going to take it to another level because, you know, it's a misdirection now. After we read that there might be extensions, and I think it was more clear for Tambellini than it was Rennie. I think Tambellini was going to get a couple of years, and two or three, Rennie might get one or two. And then you're starting to wonder, well, I mean, why would they get an extension? So then I'm watching the TSN game with the Sharks. Darren Pang says, well, you know, there's a lot of improvements in Oklahoma City. The building has been renovated for one. Oh, great. Well, maybe if they make the hot dogs better than in Stockton, you can give them 5 years.
So you're...
But, you know, so it's classic misdirection. You know, oh, well, the minor league team is better. So, you know, that proves that we're building, even though the big league club is bad. But, I mean, you look at the minor league roster. I think me and you're at loggerheads over this one. But I think Colton Tubert, nobody's going to say that the arrows are pointing up. They're lateral at best. So who's left down there? Just Hamilton and Pitlick. Yeah, they might be decent. They might be serviceable to good players. But you can't point to the success of that minor league team and think that it's going to trickle up to the big club because, you know, we're not exactly having guys fall right off the vine down there. So, yeah, you get the word of the extensions possibly for management, and then you wonder why, and then Terry Jones automatically ends up down in Oklahoma City writing a big fluff piece.
I have Terry on earlier in the show, so I won't make any comment on that.
No, that's why you call me. I'll say everything that people sort of secretly think and won't say it, and I'm like, well, I don't have any allegiances or any affiliations with anybody. I mean, you don't, like, so I'm just going to say it, and you don't have to comment. I'll say it to everybody who's listening. Okay, there's the talk of an extension, and we're looking at the big club, and like, well, why in the name of God would you extend anybody? And now all of a sudden, one of the major columnists in the city ends up in Oklahoma City writing the fluff piece. So it's like, well, you know, the big club is bad, but, oh, those kids are good. Let's talk about that instead. So, I mean, I don't think that, I don't think that it's a coincidence by any stretch of the imagination. But I was heartened to read today that the Oilers are apparently out to do something that hasn't really been done before in terms of the way they're structuring their management team, and you don't really want to talk about it at this point. So, I mean, I'm really heartened about it.
Well, you have to agree, though, like someone like Timo Hartikainen may have a future in the National Hockey League. It's not like there's no prospects in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, no, that's true. I skipped over Hadakanan. Miyakova, no question. Other than that, I mean, Hamilton and Pitlick heading into last night, like identical point totals, nine points in 34 games. I mean, you know, would you ever think that they would, when we look at a TOI sheet in 3 years' time, that those guys would have top six even strength minutes?
Not at the NHL level, not the way they're bringing him along, that's for sure.
No, and if you're cheering for a team that's, you know, been in the basement so long that it has mold, I don't think that you look at the Barron's game sheet from last night and think, huzzah, this is a good reason to re-up.
Dennis, it's always an education, and I thank you very much. We're going to have you back soon, and thanks for your input. It was excellent, as always.
Yeah, no question. Thank you.
12:54, Dennis King from MC79 Hockey and the Dennis King scoring chances. Interesting guy. One thing, and we don't have time. We have to take a break because if I was any later, they'd change the locks around here. But we're going to take a break. Want to talk a little bit about Hamilton Pitlick specifically and time on ice totals and the fact that we don't have those and what kind of impact it might be having on their season. 12:54, we're back. This is Nation Radio presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 1 o'clock. We've got a brief item here, and then we'll take a break and be back with Jim Byers from the Oklahoma City Barons in just a couple of minutes. Wanted to talk a little bit about specifically Tyler Pitlick and Curtis Hamilton in the Oklahoma City Barons and their time on ice totals. Ordinarily, I do something called NHL equivalencies. Basically, take about 45%, and this is from Gabe Desjardins at Behind the Net, about 45% of the AHL offense and put it onto the NHL, and that's kind of an equivalency that you would get if the individual played as many games and maybe got a little more power play time at the NHL level. And it's a pretty effective tool. It doesn't work all of the time, but over the last, say, decade or so, it's been a pretty nice predictor. It suggested Rob Schrempf would fall a little shy offensively, that Pouliot might do the same. And in regard to the two players that we're talking about, Curtis Hamilton and Tyler Pitlick, the question I have, and I had on my blog in the last couple of days, and I continue to kind of ponder, is time on ice. We don't have the totals. We do know that somebody like Rob Schrempf, when he turned pro in 05, would have been playing one or two line minutes and getting plenty of power play time. We can see by the statistics from that era. We know from what Todd Nelson told us a couple of weeks ago that both of those young players were healthy scratches several times. I think they both missed 9 or 10 games so far this year. Plus, we're playing 6 to 8 or 8 to 10 minutes a night often. Now they're getting increased time when they do play. So I wonder if that factors into their somewhat paltry totals in terms of offense right now. I don't have the answer, and it may be barking up the wrong tree, and the other side of the argument is, hey, listen, if they deserve to play more, they would, and I understand that, but it seems to me that we're talking about an organizational decision to earn, as Terry Jones said, earn that playing time, to move it back a little bit and not have these first-year players struggling so much to score on offensively because they're in prominent offensive positions on the team. Certainly in wins and losses it's reflected, but also on time on ice, we know from what we've been told that these kids aren't playing as much. So I don't have an answer, and I put it out there only as a question and maybe something for you to ponder too, but when we're projecting these kids and we're making decisions on them, as is happening on the internet, that their failures after 6 months of pro hockey, I'm kind of a little concerned about where we're going with our math here. That's just a cautionary note from me. An item here, I want you to mark this down if you're in the city. The Edmonton Hawks Athletic Club is having a food drive this weekend. If you want to help out, here's what to do. Be part of something very important by giving to those less fortunate. Donations are delivered to the fire hall, and a tour and pictures are available for teams as well. It's at the Athlone Community Hall, 13010 129th Street. If you have any questions, contact Melanie, and it's Melmac, M-E-L-M-A-K 17 at gmail.com. That's Melmac 17, M-E-L-M-A-K 17 at gmail.com, or Melanie at G-A-N-D-M-P-E-R-R-I at hotmail.com, and that's the Edmonton Hawks Athletic Club having a food drive this weekend at Athlone Community Hall. It goes tomorrow between noon and 5. That's at 130-13010 129th Street. So check that out. And we'll be back right after this. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
8 minutes after 1 o'clock into our second hour of Nation Radio. And don't forget, Jungle Jim Hunter joins us at 2 o'clock until 4 o'clock this afternoon with his show. Lots of Olympic coverage, some good news in soccer yesterday, and no doubt he'll have more on that coming up between 2 and 4 o'clock today. Now, we've had a very interesting first hour of the show with Terry Jones on Route 66. We also talked to Dennis King from MC79 Hockey about the Oilers, about the Oklahoma City Barons, and about what is going to be a very interesting, I think, second half of the season. Because the Edmonton Oilers are at a position right now, it's somewhat unique in that they can decide to not necessarily offload a bunch of people at the deadline, but there are rumors that Hemsky is in play, Sutton is in play, some say Habibulin might be, others have mentioned Theo Pekham, maybe Sam Gagner. If you're going to offload, you know, a couple or three players, maybe the idea is to compete, but, you know, definitely be in two or three range overall as far as pecking order is concerned for the draft. The other side of that, based on the Terry Jones article that we saw this week, is that there's a definite possibility that Tom Rennie's job, at least somewhat, is in play with regard to the second half of the season. Now, it's always been my feeling that Tom Rennie, honestly, this year didn't have the horses. You remember the first, I think it was 12 games, they were 8-2-2, looked really good. They were dynamite on the power play, lots of things going well. The big thing was the save percentage of Nikolai Habibulin and Devan Dubnyk, and we knew that would fall back to earth, and it did, and that had an impact. And then the injuries came, which it seems like every winter, honestly, Santa should stop bringing the Edmonton Oilers injuries, because January was a mess. Now they're in a position where they're getting these folks back, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Tom Gilbert. They're going to be more competitive definitely through the month of February, unless they start making early trades before the deadline. So where are they at? Are they going to make that move as far as trading people and getting another very high pick, or are they going to be more competitive and maybe pick 7th, 8th, or 9th, somewhere in there? I guess we'll find out in the second half. It's an interesting question, and I have to believe that, I definitely get an answer at the deadline, because if Aleš Hemský and Sam Gagner go, that's going to mean that a very young player, possibly unproven player, is playing in the top six, or Ryan Jones, something along those lines. It's 10 minutes after 1. We're joined by Jim Byers from the Oklahoma City Barons, play-by-play guy. Jim, I was listening to your broadcast last night. You had Sauter as color commentator and Terry Jones as an intermission guest. It's a wonder you had to talk at all.
They do make life a little bit easier. You still have to prepare, but prepare a little differently. When you're solo on the road, you have to cover a little more airtime, no doubt, but it's great to have men with their experience on the air with us.
You know, I was interested in just, it seems to me as though in talking to Terry and then listening to the broadcast last night, it really was two games, a strong first half or first two periods, and then a little bit of struggling after that.
Yeah, you know, I think Todd Nelson in our post-game show put it best, and we alluded to this on the air too, that it's just human nature that, you know, the Barons know Houston's a good club, and these teams have battled for a year and a half. But when you have a team down 4-0 after two, I think it's natural to let up on the gas a little bit. I think that's what happened. Plus, Houston came out strongly in the third period, and they had a lot more incentive in that third to keep pushing hard. And so the third period got a little bit lackadaisical. But then when the game did get to a 4-2 score, the Barons were able to knuckle down and play well enough to hold off. That empty net goal with about 2 minutes left took a lot of pressure off as well. But, yeah, it really was a case of two games. The first two periods were just tremendous, I thought, from an Oklahoma City standpoint.
Is it difficult? You know, there are three players sent down, including Hartikainen and Chorney. Is it difficult for the coach and then also for the players to kind of reestablish themselves for such a quick turnaround?
I think so. I think we've seen before that through nobody's particular fault, sometimes it can be an issue sending guys back and having them mesh back in. It's not that guys don't get along or that they're not used to the systems, but we saw in the playoffs last year when they sent five players down, five key guys, and we've seen it at times earlier this year that sometimes when you get an infusion of talent, even if the players are better, that there's just something about the recent chemistry that doesn't mix quite as well. Plus, you're having to sit guys that have been seeing a lot of ice time and playing well of late. So it's not always as seamless a transition as it was last night. I mean, when they work Pajarvi and Timu, who really haven't been gone very long, and some of those other guys back in, Josh Green, who'd only played a little bit in the month of January here, it was like it was seamless. It was like they'd never been gone, and that's a challenge for the coaches, not only to get the line combinations going, but to get everybody kind of going in the same direction when they've been in different leagues and different locations.
It must be nice to be calling so many wins and to have so many all-stars on that Oklahoma City Barons team.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that I get paid whether they win or lose, but obviously when you're a team's broadcaster, you'd rather see them win. I mean, there's just so many more angles to talk about, and everybody's in such a much better mood, and it just gives you a lot of real positive things to talk about. And when they added Ryan Keller as a fourth playing all-star this week, in addition to Coach Todd Nelson, it was definitely a boost. I've never, in all the years I've done this in various sports, I don't ever recall a coach or manager that I've worked with being the all-star coach in a given year. So that's been a nice little benefit, too. And I think it's fitting. I mean, this club is right now the best club in the AHL. We don't see the Eastern teams, but it's going on record. And that can change, obviously, at this level with all the player transactions you have. But it's good to see these guys get rewarded while they're on top.
Alex Plon is a 2007 first-round draft pick, and among some there's a sense that he may not be developing or that his foot speed may keep him from the National Hockey League. He's an AHL All-Star. Do you see him as a guy who is working towards being capable at the higher level, at the NHL level?
You know, I think he is. I think I've seen definite improvement in this game this year. I think he's become a little bit headier when he's been working the point, whether it be just on the power play, which he doesn't get a lot of power play time, or just in general. I think he's getting his shots through a little bit more effectively. His assists seem to be up this year. And defensively, he is pretty solid. I think because he has long reach and because he's pretty strong, I think he could make it at the next level. You know, definitely you do notice the fact that he doesn't have the foot speed that a lot of other guys have, but he's big. I think he's a little bit quicker this year because he did noticeably lose weight in the offseason. I don't know what the total was, but, I mean, it was visible in his face and his body that he had lost weight in the offseason. And I think he's gained a little step because of that. I mean, he needs to make use of the speed that he has. But combined with his reach and his strength, I think if he puts it all together, I think he's got a chance to play at the next level. I mean, he's certainly a guy that's an excellent AHL player, but possibly getting better at this level, I think, from last year to this.
Oiler fans will remember that Taylor Chorney was waiver eligible and lost to St. Louis via waivers earlier this year, although he's back in the fold now. That'll be the situation for Plante next year. In your estimation, has he improved enough to come possibly this fall to camp and really push for NHL employment?
That's Plante, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, there seems to be an influx of guys all the time. You know, not only some of the junior defensemen that they have that they've drafted, but other players they might acquire. I mean, it's obviously very competitive, but I think he's got a shot. I mean, maybe not to be a top couple pairing guy, but a guy that could certainly be in that mold where he's sort of a sixth, seventh defenseman next year. I mean, I would certainly hope so. You know, we tend to judge players down here with what we do. You know, just based on what they can do at this level and just sort of, you know, we just sort of speculate and just for our own amusement what they might do at the next level. I try not to get into that on the broadcasts or dwell on it because that's not what we're here for. And our listeners in this area really are primarily concerned with how the Barons are doing. But, you know, if you could put your amateur scouts hat on, I mean, I think he's definitely got a shot to compete next year. I mean, it is kind of a getting to be sort of a do-or-die situation, which is, I'm sure, scary for these guys. But, you know, we've seen O'Mara pick up his play this year when he's been faced with a situation where his window has been getting smaller. So hopefully it's going to work that way for Alex, too.
A question in regard, somewhat similar, in regard to Gilbert Brulé. Here's a guy who was in the minor leagues, got plucked off waivers, doing well in his new NHL city. Did the players in the Oklahoma City Barons, obviously they follow that. That's got to be kind of an encouraging tale for them as well, right?
Oh, I think so. I think, you know, most of these guys have gotten to this level being some of the best players on their teams and in their previous leagues. And, you know, these guys aren't used to perhaps being a guy that's farther down the depth chart. And so I think there's that innate confidence in athletes at this level. And I think many of them feel if they just get the opportunity, they can rise up. And certainly a guy like Brulé with well over 300 NHL games is a guy who has been, proven that he can play at the next level. And even if the production hasn't always been what they thought it was going to be. So I think guys are happy when guys go up and perform well. And in some cases, I don't think these guys are really all that surprised at a Brulé or somebody else when they get an opportunity and maybe a change of scenery are able to blossom, because, these guys are, they might be in some cases, they're out of the NHL for a particular reason, but there isn't that much difference really between the levels. If you look at it on an individual player basis, there's not that much that separates these guys from being frontline NHLers, maybe just a tweak here and there, an attribute here and there. So it doesn't surprise me really that much when guys go up and perform. Actually, it surprises me more when guys get called up, like a Pajarvi, let's say, who looks so brilliant down here, and then they don't perform at the next level. That's actually a bigger surprise to me.
Do you think we're talking today about all kinds of Oklahoma City products, and Pajarvi is one of them. The consensus here seems to be let Pajarvi go down there and really dominate, and maybe not even bring him back this year. Do you get a sense that that's a possibility, or do you suspect he'll be called up after the break here?
Oh, I think it's a possibility he'll be here the rest of the year, but that's so much of that is just out of our control. And I'm not really in on the inner workings of the organizational philosophy on when they send guys down. I mean, I'm just like anybody else, just sort of viewing the transactions once they occur. But it just seems like whenever they send a guy down for any team and they say, well, this guy is down here now to dominate and to get experience, it just doesn't seem to work that way. I mean, it's so subject to the whims of what's happening in the big league club and injuries and need at the next level. I mean, Petrie was supposed to get a full year here last year. He's supposed to get a lot of time here this year. He hasn't come close to that 2 years running. And so, I enjoy every day that Pajarvi plays for the Barons, and I never expect to see him here the next day. Certainly it might help him. I think it would help a lot of players to spend a little time down here and develop, kind of like the Red Wings mold. Todd Nelson likes to talk about how Red Wings prospects have to kind of cool their heels in Grand Rapids for a while because of the depth of that organization. But, a different place and different stages of their development. But, I hate to be pessimistic from an Oilers standpoint, but I find it hard to believe that Pajarvi is going to be here until mid-April. But, if it happens, that would be good for us. Not so good for Magnus financially, but it would be good for us at least.
Of the players who are playing their first AHL seasons, and not all of them are 20 years old, but like Hunter Tremblay, Tanner House, Curtis Hamilton, Tyler Pitlick, Tervainen, Ryan Lowry, Tulipov, I think that's most of them. Which one, in your opinion, has impressed the most?
That's a good question. I think strictly looking at it on an AHL level, I think Hunter Tremblay, he's had the advantage of several years in the Ontario League, had the advantage of playing for that huge national power in New Brunswick and university hockey and getting used to winning championships there. So he's an older guy for an AHL rookie, but he can kill penalties. He's scrappy, not the biggest guy, but he's absolutely, seems absolutely fearless. And, he's gotten a knack for scoring timely goals and just doing little things that help you win. Tanner House is also another college product and another guy that's got a little bit of benefit of some experience on him. Those guys, you can tell just the age and the physical maturity versus the guys like Pitlick and Hamilton. They're just that much farther along in their life development. I think they're able to handle the big steps you take when you're living out on your own and you're in a strange city and you're playing three games a week in different towns. And the other guys just need a little bit of time. And, the jury is still kind of out on guys like Tulipov and Tervainen and guys that have more experience. They're new to the North American scene. They both have physical gifts, and they've been contributing. But, they're a little bit harder to pinpoint where they're going. A guy like Tremblay and House, they're guys that are still developing as slightly older rookies, and the older rookies adjust quickly. But I think Tremblay has been a guy that's really been impressive because he contributes in a lot of different areas.
we keep trying to change the slant of the Linus Omark story, and Chris Westcott keeps saying, you know, every time he talks to Linus Omark, he says he wants to come back, he wants to play in the NHL, he's not going to Sweden. There are all kinds of rumors flying out there, but every time Omark opens his mouth, he says, I'm going to stay in North America. Any, number one, any word on when he returns? I know it must be close. And number two, any, do you hear any rumors about him going to Sweden?
You know, I really don't. I have not been in, you know, been around Omark a whole lot lately. My job is such that I get to practice sometimes. I'm not with the team 100% of the time when we're at home, let's say, and they're practicing. So I am not, I don't have my finger on the pulse of, you know, movements before they actually happen. I know that the cast is off and he's due to start. If he hasn't started skating yet, he is due to start skating, like, you know, literally today or any day now. I think they're going to be, they're probably going to give him a couple of weeks to get back, you know, get his skating legs back underneath him. And the schedule's very light right now. I mean, the All-Star break's coming up here in a couple days. Barron's only played two games next week. Then we hit Calgary and Abbotsford on February 9th and 11th for a two-game trip. So really, we're looking at three straight, counting this one, two-game weeks. So there's not that much hockey. I would think after that Calgary-Abbotsford trip, when you get to middle to late February, it'd probably be when he comes back. But I'm afraid I don't have any inside, you know, scoop necessarily on whether he's here or there. It seems just from reading about it and just the general vibe I'm getting is he might end up staying here, but I really don't have any insight on that.
No, that's good information, though. Now, as you say, the AHL break is coming up for the All-Star game here right around the corner. That's a few days off for you, or?
Well, you know, it's kind of like a normal week for me, really. I mean, I'm not going to Atlantic City. There's nothing particularly for me to do. We have our normal, we do a Monday night radio show, as always. So it's kind of a normal week. It's just, we play this week, last night and tonight, and then we're off until Thursday. So not a radical change here in this sport. It's just really, it's kind of a compressed All-Star break. The bigger break, really, in the AHL seems to be more the Christmas break. The whole league basically shuts down for 3 to 5 days. There's three whole days with no games in the league at all, plus most teams have a bigger break than that. So that's actually more of a break for us than the All-Star break, but it's kind of nice here to have a little ease up in the schedule.
Jim, it's always informative. We thank you so much, and we reserve the right to call you back soon.
Hey, no problem. Thank you.
All right. Jim Byers, Oklahoma City Barons play-by-play guy, and, you know, he always says, well, but he gives great insight on the young players and exactly what's going on, and he always passes along excellent information, and we do thank him for it. Anybody my age, and you know, it's not young, let me tell you, it's not like you should, you know, hope to be in my age range, but anybody my age remembers the WHA very fondly. And for lots of reasons. We talked to Terry Jones about that earlier, but lots and lots of reasons for it. And coming up next, I'm really looking forward to talking to one of the founding fathers of the WHA, and really one of the people responsible, along with Bill Hunter and all kinds of other folks, for Edmonton Oiler hockey in our town, Dennis Murphy. We're going to be talking to him in just two shakes here. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 1:31 at 2 o'clock today. Jungle Jim Hunter and his show. A very interesting show coming up, as always, between 2 and 4 o'clock today. And don't forget, 6:45 tonight, pregame. Edmonton Oil Kings hosting Vancouver Giants. Taylor Hall bobblehead night. Very cool. And the Oil Kings, you notice what's happening in the city of Edmonton? This, you know, the Oil Kings been around for a few years. This year, they got a kick-ass team, and everybody is talking about the Edmonton Oil Kings. And I hope that they get a really long playoff run, because it's been a little while coming for the Edmonton Edmonton fans to warm up to the Oil Kings. But a nice long playoff run here. This team looks really good. I was talking to Kent Simpson about it the other day, and this team is looking very, very good. So we look forward to Corey and Kent and everybody. 6:45 tonight, the Edmonton Oil Kings on Taylor Hall bobblehead night. Connor, are you going to be at the game?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Are you going to get a Taylor Hall bobblehead?
I'm going to try to. Because I've missed out on the other ones, but
this could be the first Oilers Nation bobblehead of the collection. Or are you going to take it personally?
Oh, I'm pretty selfish.
Go team, Connor. Go team. Very nice.
Work for the team, but
now you're what? 12? How old are you again? I can't remember.
24.
24. Do you you have what's your recollection of the WHA? Anybody ever talk to you about it?
Growing up, had some books about it. You know, learned about the history of the Oilers, but
like Rebel League and stuff like that. Is that it doesn't ring a bell at all? You're giving me that blank. Like, all right, for those of us who are my age, the WHA was it, baby, and we loved it when it came into form in 1972. I am joined and proud to be interviewing Dennis Murphy, one of the founders of the WHA. Dennis, how are you this afternoon?
Well, I'm just very, very proud to be associated with the WHA, and it's been a great run, and they've done a great job, Edmonton especially, because they won 5 Stanley Cups, and I found out the other day that since 1979, they've won more cups than any other team in the National Hockey League, which is unbelievable. And I'm just very, very proud of the WHA and, of course, the Edmonton Oilers.
You know, as a fan of hockey and NHL hockey, I remember very well when the Oilers came into being, and Bill Hunter was such a big part of that. Obviously, you were, Gary Davidson, and probably like 10 or 12 guys who really worked very, very hard over a short period of time to make it happen. And as you mentioned, Edmonton is a big part of that. When you look back on those WHA days, did you ever have an idea that it would end up being the success it was?
No, I really did not. And to be honest with you, if it wasn't for Bill and Ben Hanskins and Scotty Monroe, we never would have made it happen. It was those three guys that gave us the stability and the credibility to make it happen. And we're very, very proud that those three guys were the guys who really made it happen.
The WHA is famous for so many stories, and they're, you know, hilarious and funny. And do you have any that you know, you obviously been talking about the WHA a lot recently? Any stories that may surround Edmonton that you recall that stand out for you over these many years?
Well, basically, one of the stories that I always tell, and it's so true. You know, when we started the WHA. And I made my first couple of trips in Canada, I found out real quick that, you know, we Americans, when it came to hockey, we were kind of second rate at that time. Now, of course, the National Hockey League and all the programs that have been involved, they really realize how wonderful hockey is. But at that particular time, It was a tough battle for us. And when we got Bill Hunter involved, I can remember at those meetings that we always had and came up with some goofy ideas that we had, Americans did, Bill would always straighten us out and he'd pound on the table and he'd say, "Hey, you know what? You Americans ought to stick to basketball and let us run hockey." And you know what? He was right, because he came up with all the ideas that we had that would work, and very frankly, I don't think if he had not been together with Ben and Scotty, we most probably would have been out in left field someplace.
One of the biggest innovations of the WHA, and it's something people, I think, have forgotten about, is the influx of the European player. A lot of talent came from Europe right to the WHA, and that started early on, right?
Yeah, and Ben Hanskin was the guy that really did it. He thought that, you know, that the Europeans had been playing hockey and that there were some darn good talent over there. And you know what? He was absolutely correct. And he brought Ulf Nelson and Anders Hedberg and all these wonderful European players. And we were very fortunate in kicking it off. And now the National Hockey League, of course, uses a lot of those players. And we're very, very happy that they are, because it becomes really the best players in the world are in the National Hockey League today. And it makes it number one when you talk to people and tell them that hockey played in Canada, the United States, and North America is the best hockey in the world.
It's also funny that the WHA was responsible for all kinds of innovations in terms of statistics, like save percentage. First time I ever saw that was WHA. Plus minus numbers were published early on by the WHA. I think people have forgotten about that as well.
Well, we came up with some new innovations. I found out when I was in the ABA, American Basketball Association, when we formed that, that, you know, people like to have some innovations and they like scoring. And so what we try to do is improve the game by coming up with some innovations. And I think we did a pretty good job on it. And like in the ABA, we had the red, white, and blue ball and the three-point play and things of that type, which made that league. And then, of course, the WHA, we came up with some of the new inventions that came up. And it was primarily Ben Hanskins and Bill Hunters who came up with the great ideas, and they made it happen.
You know, you mentioned the others, but you were certainly a part of that. As a matter of fact, you were honored with the best defenseman in the WHA, won the Dennis Murphy Trophy.
Well, basically, no, that wasn't the WHA. That was Roller Hockey International.
Oh, okay.
They made it. Well, we had in the WHA, we had the. I think I was granted the honor of doing the best defenseman.
Yes.
But in the roller hockey program that we started a little later, that was the Murphy Cup, which I was very honored to have named after me.
Absolutely. The other thing that really changed, I think, and we didn't know it as fans, but certainly the players did, someone like Gordie Howe retired in 71 from Detroit, and when he re-signed after a couple of years of retirement in the WHA, he was making more money than he had over a number of years in the National Hockey League. Salaries exploded, so the WHA players have a very fond memory of the WHA.
Yeah, we were lucky in that way because, see, the National Hockey League at that time didn't have real, in my opinion, did not have the type of leadership they have today, because we most probably would have never started if Hal Bittman and all the other guys that are involved with the National Hockey League were involved today. But at that particular time, they had a little small clique, and they stuck to the Northeast, and it was kind of like a country club. They only had six teams at the time. And we just came in and we made some changes and we really did make an impact. And I think the National Hockey League today is better for it.
I agree with you totally. Dennis, I want to thank you for bringing big league hockey to Edmonton. It you know, I was a young man at the time, and it made a big difference then, and it certainly made a big difference now. And I know you've impacted a lot of people across North America. Thank you for your time, and thank you so much for your innovation.
Well, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity, Alan, and thank the people of Edmonton and wish them well, and I hope they keep going and get better and better and better and win the Stanley Cup often, okay?
Amen. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
All right. That's Dennis Murphy, founder of the WHA and a true gentleman from Anaheim. He got in contact with us, and we were thrilled to have him on. And I brought in, because Connor is young and he doesn't know these things. This is the, Connor, this is the this old yellow paper I'm holding, March 2nd, 1973, Hockey news. This is how you got your hockey news back then. There was one game a week on television, two if you were lucky. Sometimes the WHA would be on, but not as often as you'd think. Do you want to know what was in the about the Oilers in this particular edition of the hockey news?
That news, that looks brand new. You've kept that in immaculate condition.
I'm something of a collector, but here's what it says. General manager Bill Hunter got off to a fast start in his added role as coach after the club's directors decided that he would lead the team from the bench as well as being GM. They punted Ray Kanisiewicz, and Glenn Hall resigned. It's probably like 12 lines in the paper. That's all the WHA got from the hockey news. The rest was all International League and obviously the National Hockey League. But from there, you know what? It grew up and finally merged with the National Hockey League, and the legacy is very strong. And what a gentleman, Dennis Murphy. We're so happy to have him on. And that was probably the thing that I am going to say I enjoyed most in my first year as part of the Oilers Nation. That was a great, great opportunity there. 1:42, 18 minutes before 2 o'clock. We'll take a break and be right back. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
1:48, 12 minutes before 2 o'clock, and we'll have Jungle Jim Hunter at 2 o'clock today. We got another email from Ron, who had emailed earlier about the Maidstone, Saskatchewan. He said, Alan, I went to the very first WHA game in 1972 in Edmonton. Bill Hunter and Ben Haskins took the ceremonial face-off. Bill cheated and slapped Ben's stick before the puck drop. Bobby Hull did not play due to legal issues not yet resolved. And it's funny, you know, I can still remember the excitement of being able to listen to a big league team on the radio, and then later on, it was probably 2 years later that I actually got to see an Edmonton Oilers game. But if you know a 50-year-old guy who grew up in Edmonton, ask him about the Edmonton Oilers of the WHA. You're going to get all kinds of stories about guys like Ken Baird and Rusty Patenaude, and you know, it'll be a great time. The guy you're talking to will have a blast, no doubt about it. D writes in, and this is from the Oilers Nation blog, if there was ever a reason to finish last again, this is it. If Cates is thinking really long term and is reading the tea leaves that upcoming work stoppage could mean a repeat of Sidney Crosby, the Oil could be in a position to have two number one draft picks for the price of one with a lost season. Wow. That I never thought. That I never thought of. That's truly brilliant. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's probably too far down the line to think that way, but I'm telling you, that's truly brilliant. That really, really is. Anyway, 1:49, we're joined now by Corey Graham, play-by-play guy of the Edmonton Oil Kings. Corey, how are you this afternoon?
Ah, pretty good, Alan. How are you?
Good. Quick turnaround for you, eh?
Yeah, back-to-back games, 3 and 4, so it's a little bit of work on a Saturday afternoon, but nothing wrong with that.
Is Simpson going to finally earn his money? Because he rarely talks. The guy, if he got paid for word, it'd be like $500 every time he speaks.
That's funny. We kid around about that. I try to give him spots to talk more, but last night's game was so high-paced. I think it was like 8 or 9 minutes without a whistle, so I was kind of looking at Kent, and he was just kicking back, relaxing. So he had it easy last night, so hopefully there's a few more chances for him tonight.
He reminds me of the color guy on Major League, the baseball movie. Yeah. All right. Anyway, enough about that. 6:45 pregame, Oil Kings tonight against Vancouver. Tell me a little bit about the game. Obviously, the Oil Kings are flying high.
Yeah, the Kings are going here quite well. They're undefeated, I guess, in regulation, their last five, and rolling. And a good chance to see the Vancouver Giants. Their lone appearance here this year. Looking forward to it. Obviously, you know, Oiler prospect David Musil's in the lineup. Brendan Gallagher, Team Canada, junior star, is going to be here tonight as well. So it should be a pretty spirited tilt. Vancouver beat the Oil Kings earlier this year out in at the Pacific Coliseum in Vancouver 4-1 in a game they pretty much dominated, Dallin. And, you know, they're sitting with 59 points, fifth in the Western Conference. Basically, it's interesting. Them and Spokane are tied with 59, and there's a big gap on either side. So it seems like unless one of these teams gets real hot or real not, that they're probably going to likely hook up in the first round of the playoffs. So they're kind of in the battle for home ice right now in the first round. And the Oil Kings right now, of course, leading the Eastern Conference, and like I mentioned, on a pretty good roll here right now.
It's funny because everything's coming together. They look really good, and you're noticing almost everywhere. I look at the top scorers, and Michael St. Croix is third overall. Ruck is in the, I think, just outside the top 10. Things are really rolling just about every place for the Oil Kings.
Yeah, I mean, things are going pretty well for this club right now. They're getting some good goaltending, obviously the scoring like you mentioned there, and defensively they're playing pretty well, and Martin Gernat's back and playing like he was at the start of the year. I know we've talked about him a couple times, and he's starting to put up points like he did earlier. Griffin Reinhart's back in the lineup, had a couple goals the other night, so it seems like right now everything's firing for the Oil Kings, and it's going to be a tough test here tonight, and then that leads into their next game against Red Deer next Friday, which is going to be an absolute war between those two teams, or that rivalry is really starting to build.
The Oil Kings didn't give up much at the deadline, but they did make some additions, just, you know, a slight tweaking. How's that working out for them?
So far, so good. You know, they brought in Henrik Samuelsson from Modo, and in the seven games he's played, he has 4 goals and 9 points. So he's been a real nice addition to their top six, a big forward, you know, just over 6'2", and he's a centerman, right-handed shot, and he's really fit in well with DJ Foster and Dylan Rock on their, I guess, their quote-unquote second line. And like I said, he's putting the puck in the net. He's been kicked out of a game for a charging major. So he's got, he's Elf Samuelsson's son, so a little bit of a chip off the old block. He finishes his check. So, I mean, he's been a real nice addition to this club, and it allowed them to really be quiet around the deadline just to bring in him and not have to part with any assets to bring in anybody else.
As I drive around the city and talk to people, I mean, the Oil Kings are very entertaining. That's always been the case. This, honestly, has been the first time since the Oil Kings arrived this time around where the buzz is really starting to happen. I mean, I talk to people who are excited about it. They're engaged. They know the games are. They're going to the games. They know the players. Do you feel that when you're at the games, at the home games especially, that there's a buzz that hasn't been there before about this team?
Yeah, absolutely. It's starting to happen more and more. You know, there was a good crowd last night against the Brandon Wheat Kings. If we go back to that game against Tri-City Wednesday, there was a definite feel in the building. There's a lot of build up to it. They got a lot of media coverage, and I know that's something they've been looking forward to here. And it felt like a playoff game, and it was played like a playoff game on Wednesday night, Alan. And you know, the buzz is definitely here, and I think it's going to grow. Like I said, with Red Deer coming into town next week, of course, last year's playoff matchup and a couple games earlier this year that have been really hard fought. I think you're going to see that coming next weekend as well. The Oil Kings get a bit of a break for the top prospects game coming up this week, so they're off till Friday after tonight. And,
okay.
And of course, Vancouver is always a good matchup with two. The bigger cities in the WHL going head-to-head.
I should know this, but I don't. Top prospects, anybody going?
Griffin Reinhardt's going
okay.
for the Oil Kings. Yeah,
of course he is.
Yeah, he's the lone player named, and I thought there was an outside chance that Henrik Samuelsson might go if there was an injury, but I guess the roster is pretty much healthy heading in, so he won't be playing, unfortunately, for him. But, yeah, Griffin Reinhardt's going to go.
Taylor Hall bobblehead night, are you going to grab one?
I already might have one, you know, so I think I'm okay. But, yeah, first 500 fans in the door, pick up a Taylor Hall bobblehead. You have to put your scar on, though, yourself. It doesn't come with a scar.
6:45 tonight. Corey, thanks, man.
Anytime, Alan.
All right. That's Corey Graham, play-by-play guy at pregame 6:45 tonight. Oil Kings hosting Vancouver Giants. If you're an Oiler fan, David Musil obviously playing along with Christian Pelce and Martin Gernat from the home side. And boy, I'd have a long look at that Griffin Reinhardt kid. I'm telling you, I'm just saying that the Edmonton Oilers are going to be, I suspect, in that area where, hey, they might be, you know, drafting around where he'll go, and he'd be an outstanding addition based on size and skill and all that stuff. I would like to thank Terry Jones from the Edmonton Sun. We also had Dennis King from MC79 Hockey, Jim Byers from the Oklahoma City Barons, and Dennis Murphy, co-founder of the WHA, and a big reason why we have big league hockey in Edmonton, and I got to tell you, that was a thrill. You know what? We love your suggestions, too. If you want to pass them along, just email us, nationradio@team1260.com. We'll do our best to get them on Nation Radio every Saturday, noon to 2, right here on Team 1260. Have a great weekend.